Welcome to the James River Church podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Pastor John Lindell. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
This morning, if you have your Bibles, I invite you to turn with me to John chapter 21 and then Luke chapter 5, or on your phone, if you can find those two passages of Scripture. We're in a series on gifts that God gives. As we're thinking of Christmas, a time where there's a lot of gift giving that happens. And God, the great giving God, according to James, the generous God, the generous gift giving God, James tells us, loves to give gifts. Last week, and we're looking at gifts he gives from John's gospel, last week we saw in John chapter 8, he gives the gift of forgiveness. This morning, I want to talk about another gift that God gives, and that's the gift of another chance. I didn't say second chance because most of us need more than a second chance. I mean, how many would say, sometimes you feel like you need a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. I mean, you kind of, he's the God of another chance. He's the God of a fresh start. Some need to know that today. You're looking at your life, you go back over this year, there are some places where you blew it big time, where you stumbled, where you fell. Where you found yourself because of that, feeling like a failure, feeling distant now from God, and maybe you've stopped following him altogether, or maybe it's just simply a matter of you've come to a place in your life where you no longer believe that God will use you like you felt he was using you or wanted to use you. And you assume it will never be the same. Today we're going to see Jesus appear to Peter and give Peter the gift of another chance. And the way he does it is so profound and so unique that Peter moves on from John 21 an absolutely different person. Now, we're going to look at John chapter 21, and what I want to do is I want to pick it up in the center part of that chapter, because in the center part of the chapter is really a set of verses that are the most known, well-known verses in this story of Jesus and his interaction with Peter. Let's pick it up in verse 15. And when they'd finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said to him, "Feed my lambs." And he said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said to him, "Tend my sheep." And he said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was grieved, because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." What's happening here? Why the triple interrogation? Some, as they preach it, and I'm not saying this is wrong, I'm just suggesting something a bit different, but some, when they preach it, will highlight the different Greek words that are used there. Now, remember, Jesus did not speak Greek to the disciples. They spoke Aramaic. John is writing to a larger audience, so he writes in Greek, which is the common language across the Roman Empire. But as he tells his story, John uses different words for the word love, different Greek words. So John uses two words. He uses the word agapeo, and he uses the word phileo. If agape is that divine love, then phileo love is that brotherly love. You know, we've got the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, We get that word, that name from that word phileo. So if agape is divine love, then phileo is that brotherly love, you know, the kind you have for your brother and sister after you turn 25. Two times, Jesus says, Peter, do you agape me? And Peter says, Lord, I phileo you. In other words, Jesus is saying, Peter, do you love me with that divine kind of love? And Peter is saying, the best I can say is that I love you with a brotherly love. And then Jesus says, do you phileo me? I mean, is that the best you can do? And Peter says, well, you know, what else can I say? Others say, well, Peter denied Jesus three times, so Jesus asked him three times if he loves him. And the problem with that is it seems, when you take it that way, rather petty to on Jesus' part to say, you denied me three times, so I'm gonna ask three times if you love me. That just seems very unlike Jesus. I wanna suggest to you something very different's going on here. I mean, if I come home at the end of the day and Debbie says to me, she meets me at the door and she says, John, we really need to talk. And I say, sure, what's up? John, I just need to know if you love me. And I'm like, well, sure I love you. I've been loving you all these years. Of course I love you. No, John, I need to know, do you love me? And I answer maybe like the guy on Fiddler on the Roof, Raptavia, when he asks, you know, he asks his wife, do you love me? And she says, you know, I cook, I clean, I do all this. You know, of course I love you. So, you know, maybe it's that, you know, I do this for you. Of course I love you. So, John, I need to know, do you love me? In that moment, I would know that something very, very deep is happening, and our conversation is taking us into a different place. I want to suggest to you that that's exactly what's happening in John chapter 21. So with that as a backdrop, let's go back to the first part of the chapter, John chapter 21 and verse 1, and let's read this. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. After what? After his resurrection appearances, after his appearance to Mary, and then after his appearance to the disciples in the upper room where the doors are locked, and then after his appearance to Thomas, who said, unless I see the nail prints in his hands and his feet and his side, I'll not believe. After those appearances, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, that's the Sea of Galilee. And he revealed himself in this way. I've underlined, if you were to look in my Bible, you would see those words underlined because the key to verse 20 or to chapter 21 is the revelation of Jesus. That's what this is all about. You find it again in verse 14. This now was the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. So Jesus is going to reveal himself to Peter. Because what Peter needs in the midst of his feelings of failure is a fresh revelation of the love of God for him. He doesn't need a lecture. He doesn't need to be straightened out theologically. Here's what he needs. He needs a revelation of the love of Jesus, and he needs to hear again that nothing of God's purpose for Peter has changed. Along the way, in the midst of failing Jesus, Peter has forgotten something very, very important. Let's go back to verse 1. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he revealed himself in this way. Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, that would be James and John, and two others of his disciples were together. And Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. They said to him, we'll go with you. And they went out and got into the boat, but that night. I want you to notice the boat and the word night. The word night is a word that John uses throughout his gospel in a very poignant way. Whenever John is using it, whenever he's talking about night, always there is an undertone. There is something ominous about it. There is something dark about it. For example, Nicodemus, the teacher of Israel, rather than coming to Jesus in the daytime, is afraid. Afraid of what people will think, afraid of what people will say, afraid to have that discussion. So he comes to him at night. In John chapter 9, Jesus says to the disciples after he heals the man who was born blind, he says, we have to work while it is day. Why? Because the night comes when no one works. You're not able to work in the dark. You're not able to work at night. In John chapter 11, Jesus said, if anyone walks at night, he stumbles. When a person's moving around at night, your risk of falling, your risk of stubbing your big toe is increased. And then, maybe most poignant of all is Judas, John chapter 13. Jesus said, whatever you're going to go and do, do quickly. And Judas got up from the table and left. And he went out, and here's what it says, and it was night. Not just dark outside. Not just night outside the doors of that upper room, but night in his soul. So when we read in this verse that it's night, Peter's going to stumble. Peter's stumbling. Peter's dealing with a darkness in his soul. The light has been dimmed. Notice as well, it says, the boat, we will go with you. And they went out and they got into the boat. Interesting. Why not a boat? If you're up on the Sea of Galilee, boats everywhere, why not a boat? Because it is a specific boat that they're getting into. It's the boat that Peter left. It's the thing that Peter said, I'll leave this behind for the greater purpose and good of following God. It's that boat. It's the boat we read about in Luke chapter 5 and verse 10, where it says, and Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you'll be catching men. And when they brought their boats to the land, they left everything and followed him. But now Peter's gone back to that boat. Not just a boat, the boat by which he made his living, the boat by which he'd established his identity. And let me just say this, that if you were to go to Capernaum and you were to look at where Peter's house was, you would find this, according to ancient tradition, that Peter did quite well for himself as a fisherman. Don't think of the disciples of Peter and James and John as being poverty-ridden. Rather think of them as upper middle income, having a very good business on the Sea of Galilee, fishing, enough that they hired other people, enough that they were providing fish to the markets in the area. Peter left that behind. But now Peter is saying, I think I'm going to go back to that. This is not a fishing trip we're reading about in John 21. This is Peter saying, I quit. You understand that, don't you? I mean, they met Jesus and he asked them to follow him. He asked them to be a learner, this great rabbi. And they had walked with him. They saw the miracles. They heard the words. They expected he would be king. In fact, they were vying for places in his new cabinet, one to sit on the right, the other to sit on the left, all of these pictures of grandeur. And then all of a sudden, instead of a throne, there was a cross, and the dream exploded in his face. And then after Jesus dies and is resurrected, he appears, and their hope is it's going to be like old times, only it wasn't. Jesus appears and out of nowhere, and then just as quickly disappears. And I'm sure Peter is thinking, I never thought it would be like this. And he doesn't have any time to process his failure with the Lord. And the disciples are there, and there is no doubt that sense of his failure at denying Christ. You know how that is when you're around people who know that you failed. You think that they're thinking about your failure all the time, even when they're not. It's human nature. And certainly, when Jesus shows up, on the one hand, he's glad to see him. On the other hand, it just simply reminds him of what he did. He did the very thing that he had said just an hour before he wouldn't do, and that is he denied him. And Peter processes it and thinks it through, and he thinks, you know what? I think I'm just going to be better off to go back to the way things were before. I'm going to get back in the fishing business. You know, there's some of you this morning, and that's where you're at. In whatever way, to whatever degree, you failed. Or maybe you feel rather God failed you. It can work both ways. He didn't do what you thought. It didn't turn out like you planned. You had hoped, you had told people, you had thought this is how it was going to be, but now that didn't happen. The healing didn't come. The breakthrough didn't take place. The business didn't succeed. The deal fell through. You're disappointed in the Lord, and now you're disappointed in yourself. And in your heart, you've already said, I give up. You just haven't told anybody. Have you ever told God you quit? I have. And if you ever have, you'll never forget it. I mean, I can remember it like it was yesterday. In fact, every January, I think about it. Long about the middle of the month of January, I think of January 1991. On the weekend, James River was starting with 42 people in the Twin Oaks Center over on Republic Road. I was quitting. And I was telling God, we'd been pioneering a church, hadn't gone very well. Had 18 people after a year and a half, 10 of whom were moving, which left 5 Lindles and my 3 original people, one of whom was a widow who didn't agree with me doctrinally. And I told God I quit. And just so he knew I was serious, I called the district superintendent, if you're from another background, like the state bishop, I called him and said, listen, I've done everything I know to do. We've got 18 people, 10 are leaving. I don't think this is going to work. I think we're wasting your money. They gave us partial support. We're wasting your money and my time. We need to close the door. And he said, you're right. He said, you want to close it this Sunday? And I said, no. I said, you know, they're not all leaving. I'll preach till I find it. And he was very apologetic. He's like, hey, I'll help you find another place. So I preached that Sunday, and something very interesting happened. The week after I quit, the church started to grow. I mean, a new family came. And then the next week, another new family. And then the people across the street got saved. And then the lady next door got saved. And then people, a lady showed up out of nowhere. And she got saved, showed up on her doorstep, ready to kill herself. And got saved and ended up radically, wonderfully being restored. Ended up getting married, getting her doctorate, going to Washington, D.C., having a great career and a family, all of those things. But I mean, at this time, everything's discombobulated. Now the church is starting to grow. But when you've quit and you know, hey, it's like you're watching it from the outside looking in, and the church grows and we get up to 100 people, but I've already quit and now I feel like the biggest failure. And then James River, you know, they had called before they started the church, asked if I wanted to come. I said, no, I'm not. The last thing I need to do is start another church. And so then in July they call and they're like, hey, do you want to come and be our pastor? I said, you know what? I think there's a lot of other people do you a better job. And so eventually we wound up coming down and talking to them. They ended up inviting us to come. What they didn't know and what only Debbie knew is as we loaded up the U-Haul to drive down here, I can remember sitting in the driveway of our duplex in Kansas City and telling her, we're going to go down there, but if it doesn't work out, I'm out. I want to go back to law school. You see, you can get in a place where you don't see clearly. You can get in a place where you lose sight of what God has done in the past, and it fogs your vision. This is Peter. This is where Peter's at. And the problem with quitting is this: you always take other people with you. You know, in my situation, I mean, I think if in my quitting, I would have taken Debbie with me, obviously. But then I would have taken David with me, I would have taken Brandon with me, and I would have taken Savannah with me. I would suggest their life would look very, very different if I had given in to the feelings of failure. Go back to John chapter 21. Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. And they said to him, we will go with you. And they're not going on a fishing trip either. They're going into business. The idea of seven of them going fishing. In John's gospel, John uses the number seven over and over again as this sense of completeness, this sense of fullness, this sense of all of them. So what the seven do is going to affect the other disciples. What the seven do, what Peter does is going to affect six more, and what the seven of them do together is going to affect the entire core that Jesus has worked with. Do you see that? Be very, very careful about what you do with your feelings of failure or your feelings that it's time for you to move out, move on, to leave, because invariably it affects. People say, well, it's my life. Well, it is. But the decisions of your life, the direction of your life, the devotion of your life affects everybody else around you. And the tenor with which you serve God, believe God, love God, and process your failure and your disappointment with God will have everything to do with how those around you navigate life. I have to be honest with you. I talk to a lot of people, especially because of what I do, the opportunity to talk with pastors, and at times because of the difficulty of ministry and because of the disappointment of ministry, what happens is parents say things in their home about the Lord, about the church, about the ministry that embitter the children against it. We have to be very, very careful how we process these things. Peter says, I'm going, and at stake is the whole future of the church. He doesn't know that. All that to say, you don't know what's at stake. You don't know, you can't see the future. You don't understand the plan of God. All we see through a glass darkly, you may know part of it. You just don't know all of it. Be careful about the decisions that you make. They went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. That's the time when you fish. But they're not catching anything. The thing they thought they could do, they no longer can do. Because now God has set his hand on their life and God has been at work and they've walked with God. You can't go back to where you were because that world doesn't exist anymore. Peter's trying to live in the past, which makes for a terrible reality in a person's life. So here's Peter. They can't catch any fish. And as dawn breaks on the Sea of Galilee, and they're up there on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, and as Peter is there, he can see. If you've ever been to the Sea of Galilee, you can see because it's not that big. It's only 6 miles across, 13 miles in length, so you can see pretty much the whole area. But he would see the towns. He would see Bethsaida, where the 5,000 were fed. He would see the Mount of Beatitudes where Jesus delivered a masterful sermon. He could see Capernaum, his hometown, the place where Jairus' daughter was raised from the dead, where his mother-in-law was healed of her fever, and where the sick and the demonized were brought to the door, and all who came to him were healed. He could see where the Roman centurion's servant was healed. He could see all of these, and no doubt as he's there and he's looking at the horizon, he's thinking about all that Jesus did, all of those places. John chapter 4, it says this, just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. That's so interesting. It's so typical of the resurrected Savior. Remember on the road to Emmaus, Jesus was right there. They were heartbroken. Jesus was right there, but they didn't know he was there. Here they are, disappointed, discouraged, to the point of quitting. But who is on the shore of their life? Jesus is right there. And I don't know where you're at this morning, but I know this, in the brokenness of your situation, in the sense of failure and desperation, you can't see him, but he's there just the same. Because the God who loved Peter, James, John, Thomas, and Nathaniel loves you. And the God who personally interacted with them is the God who interacts with you. And just the time you think you're going to go your own way is the, and that he is not anywhere to be found. He appears and then disappears. Can I just say, in that moment, he's on the shore of your life. He's right there. You might not recognize him. You might not see him initially, but he's there. And Jesus said to them, and I love this, "Children, do you have any fish?" Can you picture this? I mean, they've been fishing all night, and you have to believe they're frustrated out of their mind because Peter's told them of all the money they're going to make. And Peter said, "You know, guys, if there's one thing I know. I don't know a lot about a lot of things. One thing I do know how to do, I know how to fish. And we get out here tonight, we'll get a big catch. In the morning, we'll sell it in the markets. We'll be in the chips. We will be on our way to rebuilding our business, and I'm going to cut you in. We'll franchise this thing. It's going to be awesome." So he's, you know, you have to believe Peter was talking the whole time. I mean, you just kind of know. And so there they are. They're frustrated. They're tired. And all of a sudden, a person they don't know is standing on the beach 100 yards away. And he calls out, "Hey, guys!" They're like, "What? How's the fishing? It stinks. We haven't caught anything." "Well, I've got a great idea. Throw your net on the other side of the boat. And James is thinking, who's the comic on the seashore? Where did that guy come from? And Thomas is saying, I doubt we'll be doing that. And John says, you know what? We're out here. You don't typically catch fish once the sun's up, but what's it gonna hurt? Let's do it. So they throw the nets. And all of a sudden, the sea comes to life. And the water begins to swirl and teem with fish. And the nets are full to the point they're almost ready to break. And instantly in that moment, John, wonderful John, says, it's the Lord. Look at it. He said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved, and most scholars feel that's John, because after all, why call yourself John when you can call yourself the disciple whom Jesus loved? Therefore said to Peter, it's the Lord! When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, so he would have been just basically stripped down to his skivvies, puts on some outer garment, even though he's got to swim 100 yards, because it would be indecent in Jewish society for him to appear before another person without clothing on. He put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and he threw himself into the sea. The other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish. It is so like Peter, isn't it? He jumps in, he swims, he's now having a convo with Jesus, and everybody else is doing all the work. Peter's talking. For they were not far from the land, but about 100 yards off. Do you know what's happening here? Jesus has staged a miracle for Peter and John and James and the other disciples, because he wants to take them back to a place they've been before. He wants to take them back to that time when they met Jesus and experienced his power in such a compelling, awe-inspiring way that they couldn't imagine doing life without him. And they left everything and followed him. Look at it, Luke chapter 5. On one occasion, while the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, that's the Sea of Galilee. And he saw two boats by the lake, but the fishermen had gone out in them and were washing their nets. Getting into one of the boats, which was Simon's, that's Peter's, he asked him to put out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the people from the boat. And when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And Simon answered, Master, we toiled all night and took nothing. Sound familiar? But at your word, I will let down the nets. And when they'd done this, they enclosed a large number of fish, and their nets were breaking, and they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so that they began to sink. Those other partners were James and John, the sons of Zebedee. But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken, and so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you'll be catching men. And when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. You see, what's happening in John chapter 21 is Jesus is taking Peter back to the place where he understood who Jesus was. That moment when he met him and the revelation of Jesus was so stunning that it caused Peter to literally rearrange his entire life. I want to ask you a question. Do you remember that moment in your life? Do you remember the moment that you met Jesus and his presence was so overwhelming? And the thought of his love for you so amazing that you were willing to set everything down and follow him? Where you said, Lord, I love you so much, and I'm so taken with you and what you've done for me that wherever you go, I'm following you. If this morning you're feeling like God has disappointed you or you've disappointed him, and as a result, you're feeling like you're trapped in this life of distance from God, can I ask you a question? What has changed? Has Jesus changed? Or have you? I mean, the problem with failure and disappointment is it can fog up our vision of Jesus. And what we really need in that moment is a reminder of why we got in it in the first place. What we really need is a fresh revelation of Jesus. So Jesus shows up on the beach of Peter's life, and he doesn't bawl him out. He makes him breakfast. And this is really beautiful. Look at it in John chapter 21. When they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire. Literally, it's they saw coals and embers on the ground. The reason why I highlight that is because John only uses that. This phrase only appears one other time in the New Testament. And it's used in the Gospel of John. And do you know where it's used? It's used in John chapter 18, where it says as Jesus was being tried, the soldiers and the guards and the servants created a fire of coals on the ground to warm themselves, and Peter stood by it. Have you ever noticed how certain smells evoke memories? When I used to ride my motorcycle around and you know, it was always interesting to me as I'd ride these country roads, you'd drive by things, you'd smell things, and immediately it would remind you of different times in your life, scenes of growing up on the farm or different things, and the memories would come flooding back. You would think about them. I want to suggest to you, this is exactly in the Lord's will and in his mind what is happening. He's taking Peter back to that moment. He's using the charcoal fire and the smell of that, and he's letting Peter know that I don't hold your sins against you, and you don't need to be afraid of that memory. I'm going to give you a new memory. I'm going to give you, when you smell this smell, you're going to think of something different than you've been thinking of the last few days or weeks. With the fish laid out on it and bread, Jesus said, bring some of the fish that you've just caught. So Simon Peter went aboard, hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. I mean, I've read all kinds of explanations what 153 means. Honestly, none of them make any sense. Here's the best explanation. Fishermen love fish stories. How big was it? It was 18 3/8 inches, and it weighed 5 1/4 pounds. It might have been 5 3/8 pounds. I don't know. It looked pretty. You get what I'm saying. If fishermen caught over 100 fish, they would not say, we caught over 100 fish. They would tell you, we caught 153 fish. There, you have solved for you the mystery of the 153. It's fishermen. John is a fisherman telling the fish story. So there you have it. And although there were so many, the net was not torn, and Jesus said, come and have breakfast, and none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? For they knew it was the Lord. And now the conversation makes sense. Look at it, John 21 and verse 15. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? What is he talking about? He's not talking about the disciples, because the last thing the disciples need is another who loves Jesus the most contest. He's pointing to the fish He's pointing to the boats. What he's saying is, Peter, do you love me more than your fishing business? Do you love me, Peter, more than having things where you can control them? Do you love me more than having things where you feel competent? Do you love me more than making money or making a great living? Do you love me more than understanding the whys and the hows of life? If you do, then follow me, because your past failure did not change one part of my plan for your future. Some of you have said, I've messed it all up. It's all ruined. No. Your failure did not change God's plan for your future. You say, you don't know what my failure was. I don't. I just know the God who's greater than failure. You say, but I've lost so much time. Listen. The time lost did not change God's plan. You say, but I just don't feel competent. I don't feel that I can. Can I just say to you that even in our feelings of failure and our feelings of disappointment, that if we'll say, God, I'm going to keep walking with you, and I'm going to pick up where I left off with you, that God is able, even in the midst of those, to begin to work out his will and to bring about his will in a way that will honor him and will bless your life more than you can imagine, because I can promise you his plans for your future are more wonderful than you can imagine. You say, you just don't know what I'm going through in my heart. I know it's difficult. I'm just simply saying that when I came here, I felt like a failure. I felt disappointment. I was thinking about going somewhere else, but God had plans that were a whole lot bigger than my disappointment or my failure. Sometimes we think too highly of our own thoughts and abilities and too lightly of God's plan and his power to bring about his will. Now, setting Peter aside, has that failure or disappointment in your life dimmed your vision of Christ? Has it stopped you from following him? Maybe you feel like quitting. Listen, the Lord of glory has come on the beach, the shore of your life, and he's come to say, listen, I have something for you. Don't stop now. Don't quit now. You say, but I failed. And he says, I'm giving you another chance, because he's the God of another chance. And he doesn't do it grudgingly, and he doesn't do it in a petty, condescending way. He does it in the most gracious, the most generous, the most helpful, the most kind, the most redemptive, the most healing way possible. And this morning, on this December 2018, he wants to do that for you. Would you bow? So we're here in the presence of the Lord. There's some of you here today, and either your disappointment with your own decisions and actions, or your disappointment with what you perceive as God's inaction, has caused a distance in your relationship with him. That is not helpful to your walk with him. And you're perceiving things about God that are just simply not true. And this morning, he wanted you to hear the story of Peter. And he wanted you to remember what it was like when you first gave your heart to Christ. And he's wanting to bring back to your remembrance those plans that you felt were of him, that he put in your heart. And he wanted me to tell you, they have not changed. He's a good God, he does good. And his power and his love and his determination to work in your life is greater than your disappointment, either with yourself or with him. He's asking you, do you love him? And if you, like Peter, can simply say, yes, Lord, I do love you. I too love you. Jesus ends that chapter by saying, if you do, follow me.